Welcome to the Carolina Snowflakes podcast, where two Southerners come to terms with their liberal snowflake tendencies. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jason. And we are here with episode number 9 of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. We are calling Paula Deen Butterqueen. Or should I say Paula Deen Butterqueen?
All right, y'all.
But before we get into that, we are going to do a couple of updates. We are live in our new in-home studio that we've been working on, turning a bedroom into a studio, and it's nice in here, and it feels good. I like it.
It's going to be even nicer once we're done.
Yeah, and it feels more...
homey?
Yeah, homey.
Homey.
Yeah, it feels good. So we're happy to have that, and we're sad to announce that we lost our oldest and most beloved old cat. His name was Spot.
Spot.
He was very old.
He was old. He was 17. I actually got Spot from the trailer park when he was a kitten.
Remember
the trailer park that in the story about Cheryl shooting Chuck?
Mm-hmm.
Spot came from that trailer park.
Yeah, so he was very Southern.
Mm-hmm.
And he was part of this family, and he will be forever missed.
We're going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the things about Spot that was adorable...
what?
His love for butter.
Yeah, he did. He would eat my butter a lot.
Yeah, if you took the butter out of the fridge...
he was on it.
...for your mashed potatoes or whatever, he would be on top of that butter.
Yeah.
He was into it.
He must have loved Paula Deen.
And there's no better way than to honor Spot and his kitty cat legacy than by talking about the butter queen herself.
Yes.
Oh, Paula Deen.
This one goes out to you, buddy.
So what do you know about Paula Deen?
I know she had poofy hair.
Uh-huh.
I know she was Southern, and she cooked food, and she got in trouble for saying the N-word.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what happened to her after that.
No?
And I bet her food is quite delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
all of those would be correct.
Yeah, that's about all I know about her, though.
Well, that's a good start.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you the rest.
Okay. I'll be happy to be filled in on that story.
So Paula Deen was born in 1947 as Paula Ann Hires in Albany, Georgia, which is in the
Georgia.
South. Yeah, it's in the southwest part of the state.
Yeah, you have to pronounce it like Georgia.
Georgia.
Yeah.
Though she currently resides in Savannah.
Nice, that's where I'm from.
Yeah, that's where you were born.
That's from where I'm people from.
Paula had a pretty rough childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Or a rough young adulthood, I should say. She lost both of her parents when she was very young.
Oh.
Her father passed away when she was 19.
Okay.
And her mom passed away when she was 23.
Okay.
So that's pretty
close
young.
Too. Yeah,
yeah, close together. And she was pretty young. That's a young age to lose both of your parents.
What did they die from? Like,
I don't know what her mom passed away from. But
diabetes?
But her dad died cardiac related.
Okay.
Heart stuff.
Eating
I think he had too much butter. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
So the loss of her parents being so young as she was, plus the fact that she was married to a raging alcoholic.
Oh, well.
Deep South. She got married real young. She married her high school sweetheart
when
she was 18.
Sweetheart.
His name was Jimmy.
We met at the Cotillion.
Jimmy Deen.
Jimmy Deen. Me and Jimmy Deen met at the Cotillion.
But not that Jimmy Deen.
Yeah, he was not the sausage man.
Not the sausage Jimmy Deen. This was a different Jimmy Deen.
I'm going to be doing that accent this whole episode.
That's fine. It works.
Buckle your seatbelts.
Oh, great. Great. So, lost her parents, married to a raging alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
She had a nervous breakdown.
Okay.
She started having extreme anxiety and extreme panic attacks to the point that she actually developed agoraphobia.
Okay.
And would have panic attacks so bad that she would pass out.
Mm. So she's, oh Lord, y'all, I do not want to go outside.
Right. She didn't leave the house.
I'm getting the vapors.
She felt trapped.
Uh-huh. I don't mean to make fun of it. That's a serious condition.
It is very serious. And the fact that
it's
she
just
was
her accent.
Married to an alcoholic and losing her parents.
Yeah, actually really sad and tragic, and I shouldn't be making light of it.
Right.
But the accent is just too funny to not
Her and Jimmy had two kids.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby and Jamie.
Okay.
Paula's saving grace came in the form of her maternal grandmother, Irene.
Mm-hmm.
So her mom's mom.
Yeah.
Irene was a cook, and since Paula was a stay-at-home mother and crippled with agoraphobia and anxiety, mm-hmm. Irene took the time to teach Paula how to cook.
How to cook, yeah.
And specifically, she taught her how to cook Southern comfort foods, mm-hmm. soups, chicken and dumplings, mm-hmm. fried chicken, collard greens, biscuits, yeah. anything and everything Southern cuisine.
Nice.
And Paula has since said that she came to absolutely love cooking because she got to make these huge, elaborate Southern meals mm-hmm. that took all day to prepare.
Yeah.
And were both a really good distraction for mm-hmm. her from her situation yeah. that she was in with her husband.
Yeah, right.
And they were also a way for her to feel like she had some semblance of control.
Yeah.
Because think about it. Mm-hmm. You're living in that situation with an alcoholic husband.
Right.
You've got two kids that need you. Uh-huh. Your parents are dead. You're still young.
But the food does what you do. Yeah.
Food comforts you.
Yeah.
And it provides you some sense of control over your immediate environment.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think like it doesn't judge you. Like a lot of people that I see with food issues on television, they always say that like the food doesn't judge them. They feel judged by everybody in their lives, but food they can go to and it's always comforting and non-judgmental.
I think she saw food that way, but also the preparing of the food.
Yeah, it's like
therapy, I think. Mm-hmm. Cooking is therapy. Mm-hmm.
And I noticed it's a Southern thing to push food onto people anyway. It's a way of sort of...
It's a way of showing love.
Yeah, showing love through food.
Mm-hmm. By 1989... Paula had decided that she'd had enough of Jimmy's drinking,
mm-hmm.
so she left him.
Oh.
She packed up Bobby and Jamie, plus the $200 in cash that she had, that she had saved. Each week, Jimmy would give her a grocery allowance,
uh-huh.
and she would skim a little off that grocery yeah. allowance each week. It took her a while.
Until she saved up $200.
Until she saved up $200, and she wow. took the kids, plus her younger brother, Bubba. Because
okay, Bubba.
Bubba, because she had become his caretaker when their parents passed away.
Good
because
Lord.
He was like 7 years younger than her. He was still a kid wow. when they died. And they all packed up and moved to mm-hmm. Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
And gets to Savannah, has very little money, two kids plus a younger brother to take care of. Mm-hmm. She's got to find a job.
Yeah, cooking, I assume.
No, actually, while she was still trying to figure out what she was going to do and how she was going to support her children, Paula had a few different jobs.
Oh, yeah?
In Savannah. She was a wallpaper hanger.
Yeah, okay. That used to be a
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, that was
think
a thing.
A thing anymore.
She was a bank teller. And
okay, that's not really a thing anymore either.
She also sold insurance.
Okay, that's still a thing.
Yeah. So, and she tried different things while she was there, but none of them really were a good fit for her, and she didn't like any of
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
So in like one last ditch act of desperation, Paula created something called the Bag Lady Lunches.
Okay.
Which was a bag lunch delivery service catering to businesses like lawyers and bankers uh-huh. in downtown Savannah.
Huh.
She would cook the lunches, mm-hmm. which were Southern style. You know, she learned from Grandma Irene. Sandwiches and things like chicken salad, ham salad, pulled pork barbecue, homemade sides, desserts, custard, banana pudding, etc.
Okay.
Put them all in, you know, individual paper bags and send them with her two boys out and about in downtown Savannah to
huh.
sell.
And people just loved her food, huh?
They loved it. And that's really smart because you have to think this was the early 90s, so there was no DoorDash.
Yeah, right. It's kind of modern.
Grubhub.
It was like ahead of its time.
Yeah, and this was a convenient and really delicious lunch
mm-hmm.
delivered right to your door.
Right to your door. Wow.
By two cute young boys.
She was ahead of her time.
Mm-hmm. Smart. Mm-hmm. Smart lady. They loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Downtown loved it.
Okay.
She was able to start making some money and support herself and her kids and Bubba
okay.
at this point. And it was so good, in fact, that she was actually able to expand her operations. First, working out of a restaurant in a Best Western in Savannah.
Okay.
She took over the restaurant operations mm-hmm. there. And that restaurant was called The Lady.
Okay, The Lady.
5 years later, she opened her first standalone restaurant in downtown Savannah, along with the help of her sons, because by this point they were adults.
Cool.
They could help manage. And thus the name of that restaurant became The Lady and Sons.
Hmm.
And that's the restaurant where I have eaten in Savannah, Georgia.
Wow, cool.
And let me just tell you, it is so good.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it was good.
It is so good. When you get there, the first thing they do is greet you at the door with iced tea, like sweet tea, and a buttered biscuit.
Here's some sweet tea and a biscuit, y'all.
Before you even sit down, they are feeding you buttery homemade biscuits.
That sounds delicious.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I want to go there.
And then, of course, it's like a buffet style.
Right.
Where you can order off the menu and like everything is just so good.
Awesome.
Buttery. Fatty, flavor, delicious.
Delicious.
After that, she started opening casino buffets.
Okay.
She wound up with four, eventually, over time, she wound up with four casino buffets.
Those things make a lot of money.
That's where I ate at her second restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Because one of them was at Harris Cherokee over in Western North Carolina. Right. And so after I ate at the Lady and Sons, I also got to eat at her buffet at the casino.
Wow.
Also equally as delicious.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Huh.
3 years after she opened the Lady and Sons restaurant in Savannah, Paula was introduced to Gordon Elliott.
Okay. I don't know who that is.
Doesn't ring a bell? Okay. Gordon was a journalist and a television producer for ABC, and he also happened to have had a talk show back in the early 90s, the Gordon Elliott Show.
I don't remember that, but...
Doesn't ring a bell. Mm-mm. Gordon, at the time that he met Paula, was working on a television show called Door Knock Diners, where he would take guest chefs into the homes of regular people, like busy working families, etc., and have the chefs prepare a full meal for the family using only what was available inside the home.
Oh, okay. That sounds like reality TV that's on today.
Kinda, yeah. Paula became his guest chef.
Okay.
And she was on a few times.
Okay.
So going with Gordon.
I will cook with anything you have in your fridge.
Exactly. Going with Gordon into these people's homes and preparing meals for them.
Okay.
And she was a hit.
I declare.
Yeah. I mean, viewers not only liked her, but the Food Network channel was like, who's this?
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah. She's, yeah. Okay.
So it was less than a year later, after doing this kind of chef tour with Gordon Elliott, that the Food Network actually gave Paula her own TV show, which was called Paula's Home Cooking.
Paula's Home Cooking. I couldn't remember what the name of her. I remember she had that show, but I couldn't remember the name of it.
Premiered in November 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And Paula was eventually given two more shows on Food Network called Paula's Party in 2006.
Okay.
And Paula's Best Dishes in 2008.
Okay.
And by the mid-2000s, so we're talking 2010 or so, Paula Deen was a household name.
Yeah.
And she was a star.
Yeah.
In fact, she won an Emmy in 2007. Okay. And in 2010, she was the Grand Marshal of the Tournament of Roses Parade.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Pretty big
deal. Pretty big deal. Pretty big deal.
So by this point,
mm-hmm.
Paula was on, she was on QVC, she had her own endorsements, she was selling products, she had her restaurants going, the casino restaurants going, she's rocking and rolling.
Making bank. Y'all.
She had a dozen cookbooks, she was on the Oprah show four times.
Well, there you go.
I mean, yeah. She had a magazine. She even threw the first pitch at a New York Mets Washington Nationals baseball game in 2010.
Wow.
She had it all.
Yeah.
And her sons also were able to find success in owning and managing restaurants, writing cookbooks, and starring on Food Network themselves.
Wow.
And even her brother Bubba got in on the action when he opened Bubba's Oyster House in Savannah, Georgia.
Wow. Everybody's and making money off of it.
If you ever watched the Paula Deen show, which I watched a lot of, I don't really know why, but I just really liked her.
That's a Southern thing, I imagine.
Yeah,
the connection.
Her children, Bobby and Jamie, were always on. Like, Paula would be in the kitchen cooking. And the sons would wander through. She'd chit-chat with them, or sometimes they'd hang out and cook with her. And then Bubba would wander through, and they'd chit-chat.
Okay.
Sometimes he'd cook something.
Hmm.
Like, it was a family affair.
Right, right.
And I really always, I enjoyed Paula Deen's style, and I liked watching her cook, because every recipe started with 3 pounds of butter.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't matter. She'd be like, all right, y'all, we're going to start today. Let's go ahead and get our butter melting. You know? And you're just like, what is this?
The first thing, no matter what we're making.
She was the one who taught me that the best French fries are fried twice.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I didn't know that. Why would I know that? It was from watching Paula Deen.
Nice. Well, she was correct.
Because that's how she would fry her French fries, was frying them twice.
Yeah, much better that way.
Mm-hmm. She was great.
Yeah.
Very informative, very Southern, very easy to watch.
But then something happened. I don't really remember the details, though.
Well, yes. Something did happen.
Yeah.
Everything came crashing down.
Yeah.
In kind of an epic and spectacular way.
I wish I was paying attention at the time, because I really can't remember. I'm excited to find out.
Well, so a former restaurant manager who had worked for both Paula and for her brother Bubba rage quit one day.
Okay.
Was mad.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter filed a lawsuit against Paula and Bubba and basically the Paula Deen empire, alleging sexual harassment, racism, and a hostile work environment in their restaurants.
Yeah.
And as part of the lawsuit, Paula had to give a deposition.
Okay.
Which, you know, is like a sworn statement of truth to a judge. And one of the questions asked by the judge during Paula's deposition was whether or not she had ever used the N-word.
Oh.
Like, ever.
Ever?
Ever. Not just in relation to the employee or currently.
What about like when I was reading Huck Finn in class and that it just sort of came up because that book.
The judge asked. Paula answered.
Oh, wow. So she was like, yes, honey, I have.
She told the truth.
Yeah.
And that, yes, in her past, she had used the N-word.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as that went public, media got a hold of it, everything stopped.
Wow.
She was immediately dropped by Food Network.
So it wasn't even like she said it on TV. She just admitted that she'd said it in the past.
Yep. Huh. Everything involving her or that had her name on it.
Yeah, it was just like,
was
canceled.
Removed. All of her products on QVC were taken down, taken off air. Anything endorsement related was pulled off the shelves, pulled from television, and all of her casino buffets were immediately stripped of her name and likeness.
Wow.
And rebranded. And it happened so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can tell you that, like, on a Tuesday, it was Paula Deen's buffet at the casino. And by, like, Wednesday afternoon, there was no Paula Deen anywhere to be found. I mean, it was so fast. Ironically, the lawsuit was dismissed.
Huh.
Nobody won. Like, no, there was no settlement. There was winner. There was no...
Well, I mean, she lost. I guess there was no winner, but there was a loser.
I meant just lawsuit related.
Yeah.
And here's the other interesting part about this lawsuit. The ex-employee who brought the lawsuit was unable to prove that she herself was a victim of racism at the hands of Paula and Bubba and her staff.
Okay.
Because she was white.
Well, yeah, that would stop it from really happening, I imagine.
But it was too late.
Yeah.
The Paula Deen empire was done.
Wow.
And it didn't really help that shortly after the lawsuit, a photo began circulating from Halloween a couple years before where Paula had dressed up as Lucille Ball from the I Love Lucy show, and her son Bobby was dressed up as Ricky Ricardo.
Oh, did he put...
Yes.
Makeup on,
in brown face.
Yeah.
So that just kind of like nail in the coffin.
It makes you wonder if that photo had just come out and it was isolated, if it would have hurt them as bad as it did.
Or it makes you wonder if the photo hadn't have come out.
Right.
Would she have been able to rebound a little bit easier?
I don't know. That one's tough, especially because in theory, she was like doing the right thing and saying, like, yes, I have in my past had some discretions.
Been a racist woman. Yeah.
There are words I have said that I wish I could take back. I have my deepest regrets and sympathies.
In many ways, Paula kind of represents someone who fell to the cancel culture before we even had a term like cancel culture, because it just happened so fast. Mm-hmm. Everything was shut down. Her name was pulled off of everything. The only thing that stood, that stayed, was her restaurants in Savannah, because she owned those.
Yeah.
And anything else that was like proprietary, hers as an individual. And after this great fall, in fact, many people, including fans and even some academics, came to Paula's aid and tried to help her out and say that Paula's upbringing in the South and in Southern Georgia during the 1950s was to blame for her use of racial slurs.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever you want to say about it, it's still like crazy, because it wasn't even like she got caught saying it. It was that she under oath admitted that she'd said it before in the past, but
she was telling the truth.
I mean, I have a lot of family from Savannah, and I'm just going to tell you that anybody that's from Savannah from back then, they said that word. Like, it's
she's a white woman who grew up in the 1950s in South Georgia.
In a trailer park.
Well, I don't know if she's in a trailer park.
Well, I like to think she was
in a trailer You're just park. Making that assumption. Yeah, okay. But still. And so, but then part of me is like, but she shouldn't have said it, you know?
Well,
So I feel torn a bit. Because on one hand, I don't want to just excuse someone for being racist.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'm like, is there a middle ground where somebody can be forgiven and redeem themselves?
I think this is one of those that goes along the lines of people have done far worse things and gotten away with them. And so that's what's frustrating about it, is that it's one of those cases where what she did was a bad thing. But on the scale of bad things that have been done by people, it's not.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was something that wasn't even like caught on tape, so to speak. It wasn't something that had been recorded or documented.
Because I'm pretty sure Donald Trump has said the N-word a bunch of times, and he's the president.
I have no doubt he said it. There are people right now who are making bank off of fans. Jeffree Star is one of them. He's a famous YouTuber.
Yeah.
He has an incredibly racist past.
Yeah.
But he's still making bank and doing just fine. No one shut him down.
That, I think that's what's so bothersome about the case. It's not so much that I feel bad that Paula Deen got taken down. It's that somebody got taken down so completely over something that, to me, is less significant than some of the things that are happening.
And also the fact that there was no conversation about it.
Yeah, I don't remember
that. It was just done.
Yeah, I think it's also one of those things where do companies have the right to do that?
They do.
If you're a company, you have a right to like remove somebody whose image you think is going to negatively impact your business.
They absolutely have that right. And part of me kind of puts myself in the point of view of that, of being this CEO.
Right. If you were HR for Food Network, what decision would you have made?
You want to just not have anything to do with it.
I think that's why the situation is so complicated. There's no real correct right answer.
I think you're right.
I wish I could say that I knew exactly how everything should play out, but it's so complicated.
Well, the good news is that Paula Deen, although she had an epic fall from grace and fame and fortune, she's okay. Paula has made somewhat of a comeback.
Okay.
She still owns her restaurants in Savannah, including Uncle Bubba's Oyster House, although Bubba passed away in 2019 from pancreatic cancer.
Okay.
And she even expanded her restaurants out of state. She's got one now up in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
I bet they love it there.
Oh, yeah. And she's got one in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
I bet they love it there, too.
Oh, yeah. So I went online, actually, and looked up those restaurants, and they all have 4-star reviews or higher.
I bet they're good.
Yeah, so they're doing pretty well. And in 2015, Paula actually went digital when she launched her own network, the Paula Deen Channel, on Roku.
Okay.
So people can stream her on her own channel
That's sort of a comeback. It's not on national TV.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And that same year, she also went on and competed on ABC's Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, yeah. And now has that bitch Carol Baskin.
Oh, Carol Baskin's on there now. Yeah. But in a way, that was a good sort of segue for her into, you know, opening her own channel or getting her own channel on Roku.
I guess that's kind of what that show's for.
Yeah, it's kind of for like has been, used to be famous.
Yeah. Remember when Sean Spicer was on there? That was weird.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Ugh, why? Oh, no, why my brain. I can't.
Remember that time he hid in the bushes?
I do. Remember when he was the Easter Bunny?
Yeah, he was. He was the White House Easter Bunny.
Anyway, in 2016, she began shooting a new syndicated show called Positively Paula, which is available on a few streaming channels like RFD TV, which is on Sling.
Okay.
And also on Roku.
Okay.
And she has also partnered with a small home shopping network called Evine, which is also available on most streaming services and also DirecTV satellite services.
Okay.
So it's not HSN or QVC, and it's not the Food Network, but she's still kind of doing the same stuff that she was. It's just on a smaller scale.
Huh.
Granted, she's not back to where she had been, but it is something, and she's hanging in, basically. Interestingly, in 2009, Paula was diagnosed with diabetes.
Yeah.
Which I think most people attribute to the cuisine that she was cooking.
The sweet tea.
Anthony Bourdain never really had much nice to say about Paula's cooking.
Really?
Yeah, he, not her, herself, but he did not approve of the buttery, sugary, heavy cuisine that she cooked. He did not think it was appropriate.
He would rather kill himself than eat her food.
Yes. Burn.
Yeah, sorry about that one.
Yeah. So anyway, so she did wind up with diabetes.
Uh-huh.
And since then, she has lost quite a bit of weight.
Uh-huh.
Not that she was ever super heavy, but she was a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And she's written a few diabetic-friendly cookbooks. She also became a spokesperson for Novo Nordisk, which is a pharmaceutical company that sells diabetic medication.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what she's been doing.
They're also a frequent sponsor on NPR. You'll hear ads for Novo Nordisk all the time. So I think in her lifetime, I bet there were a lot of people that went to her restaurant to give her one-star reviews just because they were mad at her.
Probably.
And like they had a political reason. And I think that's the thing about one-star reviews is if you're going to write a one-star review, you're either very upset about something else or you're very, very unhappy with the product, or you have something very funny to say. And I read a lot of, I look at reviews a lot when I'm shopping on Amazon and stuff, and I find that the one-star reviews are very entertaining. And I have a few. This is a bit I would like to try out, and it's called Unnecessary One-Star Reviews.
Okay, I'm game.
And I'm going to read some to you.
Okay, bring it on.
Unnecessary One-Star Reviews. This is for a grappling hook that I found that was like a freaking $80 grappling hook, you know.
Why are you looking at grappling hooks?
I don't might need a grappling hook. Okay. This review is from Amazon customer. It's one star. It says, I have to give it a no. The first time I used this hook to advance my ninja training, it broke and I died. I would not recommend this product to anyone else.
It broke and I died.
Which is a good review. And then I realized that books that I think are good books, sometimes get negative reviews, which is very funny.
Uh-huh.
So here's a review of Moby Dick, Herman Melville's classic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one star. Boring. Is this fact or nonfiction? I like my fiction to be all fiction, not intermixed with boring chapters on everything I didn't know about whales and don't care. Which is very similar to this one, which is from someone named Luca. It's one star, disappointing. I've heard great things about Moby Dick. Unfortunately, it is a very long novel and do not get deep enough into Ahab and the feelings and obsessions. Whereas the author spends too much time describing whalery.
Whalery.
Which, that cracks me up, somebody.
So whalery. This guy's like, would you please just get to the point?
Yeah, there's too much whalery. That's hilarious to me. This one, sometimes you find one-star reviews that are just completely just somebody ranting. And so I found one on Titanic, the film, Titanic.
Uh-huh.
It was by a guy named Jack Phelps. The one-star review says, my stupid friend, ... My stupid friend watched this on Saturday when he was logged into my Prime account. Jesus, Adam, Titanic by yourself on Saturday night? Really?
Jesus, Adam.
Yeah.
Titanic alone?
Yeah.
You're your own date? It's a 3-hour movie, you
right.
weirdo.
Yeah. That's a fantastic one-star review. You can find gold like that if you're looking.
That's a pretty good one.
Another one is for the same movie, for Titanic. It's a 1-star review that says, I can't believe she wouldn't scoot over and let him float on the door with her.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's the only thing
that
you need to say.
Is my biggest pet peeve mm-hmm. with that movie. That is the reason that I would give Titanic a 1-star as well.
Mm-hmm.
She had plenty of room on that door.
Mm-hmm.
She just didn't want to make room for Jack, and he froze.
Yeah.
Rude.
So here's a movie I know you like. What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yes, that's a great
excellent
movie.
Film. Excellent mm-hmm. film. Calvin Filippo's gives it 1-star, says false title, bad title, Gilbert didn't get eaten.
What?
So, you know, he has that complaint about What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
False advertising.
Yes. And then Richard Bass says 1-star, it's utter crap. This movie is disgusting. It makes jokes about obesity and retardation. It does
what?
Do that.
I found neither
of these issues to be humorous. I also found the movie to be quite depressing. I expected more from Johnny Depp. Also, I never believe it to be an good idea to have a non-handicapped person portraying a handicapped person in movies. To think DiCaprio was nominated for an Oscar is enough to make me doubt the sanity of the Oscar committee.
I don't agree at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I disagree too, but that's, okay. you know, that's Richard Bass's opinion.
You're allowed.
Gilbert Grape is utter crap.
When you have access to the internet, mm-hmm. you're allowed to leave a 1-star review and express mm-hmm. your disdain.
Yeah, here's somebody that read Of Mice and Men, another great book.
Yeah.
It says, very bad. I didn't like that the dog died. Very sad and stupid. Good quality on the book.
What does that mean? Oh, like the paper was good?
Yeah, like I think the actual book. She was happy with that part. But she was sad that the
dog... The binding was fantastic.
Yeah, but the part where the dog died...
But the words within...
Horrible.
Garbage.
Very sad. Yes. And then John Grumbine, this one gets ranty. He says, Of Mice and Men is not for Christians.
Oh.
Which is a angle I would have never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I'm giving this 1-star because I can't give it 0 or negative stars. It takes the Lord's name in vain on a regular basis, and I do not believe that a Christian who wants to live a life pleasing God has any business reading it. I absolutely can't believe that this book is routinely assigned to high school students with the pathetically lame excuse that it's a classic. There's one thing this book is good for. It tangibly exemplifies some of the reasons why so many parents have pulled their kids out of public schools. Yeah. What a weird take on Of Mice and Men. That is not what I got out of that book at all.
But I had no idea there was a wave of parents taking their kids out of school over Mice and Men.
Yeah, of all the books. I mean, I mentioned earlier, Tom Sawyer does say the N-word a bunch of times.
He does.
I don't know. It's been a while since I've read Of Mice and Men, but I don't remember it being that bad. And then there's To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a book that I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And Lauren's dad wrote 1-star misleading. Author does not completely inadequate job of describing how to kill one.
How to kill.
Yeah, so he's very upset.
Okay.
And then this one I like because this dude seems very passionate about this. This is David Bumble. 1-star. One of the worst classics of all time. I reckon this will be another classic that doesn't deserve the status. For the first 28 out of 30 chapters, nothing happens. Finally, in the last 2 chapters, you get the world's most predictable ending that you spot from a mile away. It's a crime this book is called a classic. Symbolism my ass. Harper Lee hopes you find symbolism in the shower book. I strongly urge you not to even read for free at the library because you're still getting ripped off. Which, I have to give him credit on the creativity there. But that's the thing I don't understand about his opinion of that for To Kill a Mockingbird. That book is short as hell.
Yeah, it's not a very big book. We had to read it, I think, in 9th grade.
Yeah, it's not like a big investment, no. But he just was not happy with it.
Huh.
I have a impassioned review of a Yeti 14-ounce cup. It's a Yeti cup.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I'm really sorry to say this cup did not live up to my expectations. I bought this because I recently broke my leg and was getting to rewarm my coffee was difficult. Getting up to rewarm my coffee was difficult. My friend recommended this, and I read the reviews and was so excited to receive my Yeti.
Uh-huh.
This cup doesn't even keep my coffee hot for more than maybe an hour. So she's in there with a broken leg, just like stoked to get this cup.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just completely disappoints her. And I know when I've been disappointed by cups in the past, my first reaction was to 1-star review them.
Absolutely.
On Amazon.
I go onto Amazon. I'm like, this cup.
Yeah.
Barely cups.
So that no one should fall victim to the tragedy that has befallen me.
It only keeps my coffee warm mm-hmm. for an hour.
I find them to be entertaining.
pathetic.
Yeah, I find them to be entertaining and great. And we'll probably bring some more, if you guys like it, some more one-star reviews, because I find them to be fantastic.
Yes.
And that does it for this week's episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. If you like what you heard, if you want to contact us, if you have any questions, anything you would like to hear us talk about, you can always find our website at...
But please don't leave us a one-star review.
Well, if you do, make it funny.
Yeah, we'll read it.
Yeah, we'll read it on here.
Anyway, yes, you can find us at carolinasnowflakes.com.
Mm-hmm. We also have a Facebook page that you can get on.
Facebook.com/carolinasnowflakes.
And we have an email that we would love to hear from you at.
carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com.
Gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Bye.